The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter number 1, text number 6, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on January 10th, 2010, in Auckland, New Zealand.
716. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is always transcendental to material qualities, and therefore He is called Nirguna, or without qualities. Because He is unborn, He does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. Although the Lord is always above material existence, through His spiritual potency, He appeared and acted like an ordinary human being, accepting the duties and obligations, apparently like a conditioned soul. Purport. So-called attachment, detachment, and obligations pertain to the material nature, which is an emanation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But whenever the Lord descends and acts in this material world, He does so in His spiritual position. Although His activities materially appear different, spiritually they are absolute and non-different. Thus, it is an imposition upon the Supreme Lord to say that He is envious of anyone or friendly to anyone. In Bhagavad Gita 9:11, the Lord clearly says, "Avaja nanti mang mudha manusham tanum ashritam." Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Krishna appears on this earth or within this universe without any change in His spiritual body or spiritual qualities. Indeed, He is never influenced by the material qualities. He is always free from such qualities, but He appears to act under material influence. This understanding is aropita, or an imposition. Therefore, Krishna says, "Janma karma chame divyam." Whatever He does, being always transcendental, has nothing to do with material qualities. Evam yo veti tatvatah. Only devotees can understand the truth of how He acts. The fact is that Krishna is never partial to anyone. He is always equal to everyone, but because of imperfect vision influenced by material qualities, one imposes material qualities upon Krishna, and when one does so, he becomes a mudha, a fool. When one can properly understand the truth, one becomes devoted and nirguna, free from material qualities. Simply by understanding the activities of Krishna, one can become transcendental. And as soon as one is transcendental, he is fit to be transferred to the transcendental world. Chaktvadehaṁ punar janma naitimam eti sorajana. One who understands the activities of the Lord in truth is transferred to the spiritual world after he gives up his material body.
Shri Guru, Shri Jata Parakamalam, Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupa Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Damsa Jivam Sudaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha.
So Krishna is called Nirguna. This is misunderstood by the impersonalists. Nirguna can be translated without qualities. So they argue the Supreme Absolute is qualityless. But it is also explained that that Supreme Person is Saguna, with qualities. So if both terms are given, Saguna and Nirguna, then you have to understand each of them in the context of the other of them. The impersonalists are very prone to take things out of context. But the Vaishnava, he approaches the Vedic wisdom in toto. He doesn't want to squeeze out some little portion of it to justify his own agenda of becoming the Supreme. He humbly approaches the Vedic literatures and he studies them in full. So when it is described Nirguna and Saguna, with qualities and without qualities, both at the same time, the Vaishnava understands that means that Krishna is without material qualities. He has no material form, you see. But the materialists, they say it is material, as described here. They deride me when I descend in a human form. They say that Krishna is mythology. Prabhupada explains there was a government publication, the government of India, published some literature in which they said that Krishna was simply an aborigine, a powerful aborigine that they made into a superhero. The people just made him into this superhero. So such descriptions, you see, are completely bogus. Gandhi, he said that there was no person, Krishna, no historical person, Krishna, who ever existed. So such rubbish is going on in the name of Indian society. They want to say it is simply mythology. The Hindu mythology, we have heard this term. And they call the deity the idol. You see, but they were cheated by the British who taught them English. The Britishers came and said, this is called an idol, you see. But we have to understand from the authorized version, from the great acharyas who have guided the Vedic civilization for millions of years. The Vedic civilization goes all the way back to the beginning of the Satya Yuga. Prabhupada explains in his book, Renunciation Through Wisdom, how many millions and millions of years this Vedic civilization has gone on. This last 5,000 years, you see, is nothing compared to how long the whole planet was going on under the Vedic kings. So we have to see things in the proper context to understand this is a temporary situation, this Kali Yuga. And actually there's Vedic kings right now, it's described by Prabhupada, and actually it's in the verse itself, actually, in the actual shlokas in the 11th canto, is describing that there is a king from the Sun dynasty and the Moon dynasty who are hiding out in the Kali Yuga, just waiting for the Satya Yuga to come so they can again restore the rule, the Vedic rule on this planet. So they're just waiting, you see. Government, Vedic government in exile right now. It's there. So it again will be reestablished and after Kalki comes and does the cleanup of the demons. So we shouldn't be so influenced by this Kali Yuga. It's just a temporary blip in the timeline. It's just a temporary blip. We should always see through the eyes of the scripture, chastra chakshus, to understand that even though Krishna may appear to be ordinary, he is not at all ordinary, you see. We don't want to make the mistake that Brahmanji made, thinking, oh, what is this, that you're calling him God, he's just a little cowherd boy, you see. So he thought he would test this little cowherd boy. He came, the boys, they were taking their lunch. They had their wonderful lunch bags their mothers had packed for them. They were sitting there in the forest enjoying their lunch. And then the calves just wandered off into the forest. And so there was great anxiety. Oh, the calves are gone. The boys wanted to go get the calves back. But Krishna said, no, you all take your lunch. I will go take care of getting the calves back, you see. And when Krishna was gone, he not finding the calves because they were hidden in the cave by Brahmanji, the cowherd boys were also gone, you see. So what to do? I mean, just think of all those poor mother cows and those poor gopi mothers, how attached they are to their little calves and to their sons. Just imagine if Krishna had to come back and say that, you know, they're all gone. We even see in this material world how somebody's child is kidnapped and they're interviewed and they're just crying and they're totally disturbed. My child has been kidnapped. We don't know where he is. You see, it's a very heavy thing if one's child goes missing, you see. Very heavy thing. So Krishna did not want that the Brijabasis are going to be completely devastated, you see, that their calves and their sons are missing. So Krishna very kindly expanded himself as all the boys and all the calves. And it appeared to be a normal day in Vrindavan. There comes Krishna and the cowherd boys and calves back from the forest. But it was not at all ordinary day because now it was Krishna masquerading as a calf and masquerading as the cowherd boy, you see, that particular cowherd boy, and perfectly acting the role. I mean, absolutely flawlessly. Every person has his own individual way of speaking and acting, characteristics. Krishna had it down pat. He had every single character down pat, you see, just like an expert dramatist, an expert actor. Can very, very expertly play the role that you see him. You can't imagine that it's anybody other than the character that he's playing. They can so expertly play the role, you see. So Krishna was very, very expertly playing the role of being the son or the calf of the mother cow or the mother gopi. So that no one knew. But there was one thing different. And that was they had this overwhelming increase of affection. And of course, it's natural. It was Krishna. So naturally, they're going to feel this increase of affection. So these pastimes were going on like day in and day out. These amazing feelings of affection. Increased affection for that year in Vrindavan. One day, the cowherd men, they took the cows up on Govardhan Hill. And those cows looked down at the base of the hill, and there was their calves. And it's Krishna playing the role of their calves. So the mother cows have been charging down the hill out of affection for their calves. So Balaram is seeing all these things going on, and he knows what's happening. Balaram knows what's happening. He's seeing this is quite unusual, you see. But Brahmanji, he was bewildered. He came back after 1 year of earth time, which for him is just a minute, you see. He came back after a minute. Well, let me check out what my little escapade, what sort of result it generated, you see. He came back to check out the scene, and he was absolutely dumbfounded. All the boys and all the calves were still there. What's going on? I stole them in the cave. I stole them away, but they're still here? He couldn't fathom it. How is this possible? He couldn't figure it out. He was really bewildered. He was seeing this whole scene, and then Krishna decided to amp up his bewilderment. And he transferred all the boys and calves into four-armed Vishnu forms. And then Brahmaji started to figure out what was really going on. This really was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he just had to humble himself and just bow down at the feet of Krishna. And he actually was bathing Krishna's feet with the tears. He felt so bad what he had done. He just weeping like anything. And he gave prayer after prayer, the most beautiful, wonderful prayers. Ramaji just, he would compose beautiful prayer after beautiful prayer, glorifying Krishna as the Supreme. So we shouldn't make the mistake of Ramaji, thinking that, you know, Krishna is an ordinary person. Shouldn't make such a mistake. If we do so, we deprive ourselves of the sweetest happiness of Krishna consciousness. You see, this is for insiders. You see, the outsider will think, oh, mythology or some aborigine or this or that. This Krishna consciousness for the insiders, though it is esoteric, you see, for those who have been schooled in the proper understanding, who can actually see it as it is. Krishna confirms this point, Rajavidya Rajaguhyam. It is, even though it is the topmost of all knowledge, it is the most secret of all secrets. Because if one is not trained properly, if one has not been given the proper understanding by Guru, by Shastra, and by Vaishnavas, then you can never figure it out, you see. It's beyond the mundane mind to understand Krishna. But if we submissively hear from Guru, we submissively hear from the Vaishnavas, we submissively read the wonderful books, the Vedic literatures, especially Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are blessed with transcendental vision, Shastra Chakshus. And we can actually begin to understand, who is this person, Krishna? If you think about it, it's just amazing. I mean, how could somebody exist? Existence itself is Krishna's creation. And he desires in that existence, which he is eternally manifesting, to expand his own happiness by emanating from himself millions and billions of jiva souls, with each of whom he can have a unique type of loving relationship. So, how we can deny the very source of our existence? It's actually insanity not to be Krishna conscious. We're denying the very source of our existence. So, by understanding from the revealed scriptures, by understanding from the Vaishnavas, from Guru, who is this personality, Krishna? What is my relationship with him? What is his relationship with all of existence? And how can everything become perfect in my life? How can I become reharmonized with that Supreme Person who is the source of my existence? You see, these understandings, these revelations come from Guru, from Vaishnavas, and from the scriptures. How we can reharmonize ourselves with that Supreme Person. That all-beautiful, all-powerful, all-renounced, all-knowledgeable, all-wealthy, and all-famous person who, in spite of his big, big position being the absolute controller of everything, agrees to be controlled by his devotees. That's another amazing thing about Krishna. Even though he controls everything, he allows himself to be controlled by his devotees. So what you could be lacking? The pure devotee lacks nothing. He has everything. You see, because that Supreme Person, Krishna, who Bhogdaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that person who is Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, who owns everything. Why does he own it? It's all his energy. He owns everything. So who is the rightful enjoyer of a thing? Only the owner is the enjoyer, you see. If somebody else tries to enjoy that which is owned by someone else, they are called an adulterer or a thief. So, Krishna, being the supreme owner of everything within existence, is the natural enjoyer of everything within existence. So just imagine if that person who owns everything, who controls everything, agrees to become controlled by you. That means you're the virtual owner of everything. By dint of that loving relationship, Krishna subordinates himself to his devotee. Krishna is ajita, he cannot be conquered. But by love, he becomes jita, he becomes conquered by his devotee's love. One actually becomes the controller of God by developing pure love. So it's foolish to try to struggle, to compete, to be a controller of this material world. Everybody is competing to control the money, to control the political machines. It's just crazy to compete for these things. Because no matter what you achieve, even if you become a Bill Gates, you see, time and tide wait for no man, you will be wiped out by the time, in due course of time. Kalosmi lokacheya krit, Krishna says, time I am the destroyer of everything. So why should we struggle to be a controller of this material existence? Even if we were a Brahmaji, we would still have to give that position up. Time would come and take it away from us. See, why struggle to be a controller in this world when you just completely agree to be controlled by that Supreme Person, so much so, in so much loving relationship, that he'll actually switch roles and he'll be the chariot driver, you see. Just like for Arjuna. It's amazing, actually, that Krishna will subordinate himself to his devotee. This is the most beautiful, wonderful thing. Krishna is so loving and so kind. He doesn't have a lording, even though he's the Supreme Lord, he doesn't have a lording it over mentality. He takes great pleasure in serving his devotees. This was the wonderful meditation, actually, of that Brahmin in South India. You may have heard this story told by Prabhupada. There was one Brahmin in South India, Rangachakra temple. And he was illiterate. He could not read. But his spiritual master had ordered him that every day you must read the entire Bhagavad Gita. So what to do? Guru Maharaj has ordered, but I cannot read. All right, I will try to read. He would make a sincere attempt on the order of Guru Maharaj. But he became the laughingstock. All the talk would go around, yeah, that Brahmin, he doesn't know how to read. He's reading Bhagavad Gita. Everyone is making fun of him. Around that time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was doing his parikrama of the holy places of South India. So he came to Rangachatra. And he heard this talk going on. And he thought, well, let me see who is this illiterate Brahmin who reads the Bhagavad Gita. So he approached that Brahmana there in the temple room. And the Brahmin, he was used to being made fun of. He'd become rather callous to all of this criticism. Actually, Prabhupada told one devotee like that. He was being criticized by his godbrothers very much. He said, Prabhupada, I'm always being criticized by my godbrothers. Prabhupada said, so was I. He said, you have to be callous to the criticism. So anyway, he was somewhat callous to all this criticism. But when Lord Chaitanya approached him, he said that he could see this person has a different mentality. He has not come to criticize me. So Lord Chaitanya inquired, he said, Brahman, I hear that you are illiterate, but you are reading Bhagavad Gita? How is that, Brahman? He said, yes, what can I do? My Guru Maharaj has ordered me that every day I must read 18 chapters. But Lord Chaitanya said, but Brahman, I see that you're not only trying to read Bhagavad Gita, I see you are crying also, Brahmana. How is that you are crying? He said, When I read this, when I see this, they have put one painting on the book. See, it was all not printing press, it was by hand, you see. There was also, they had made one illustration, just like we illustrate our books. Yes, just like we illustrate our Bhagavad Gita. There was an illustration along with the Gita that he was reading. And he said, I'm seeing here how Krishna is acting as the chariot driver of his devotee. And I'm seeing how kind is Krishna to become the servant of his devotee. And when I feel like that, I cry. And Lord Chaitanya embraced him. He said, Brahmana, you are the real scholar of Bhagavad Gita. So, this moved the Brahmana. He was very, very moved to see how Krishna would subordinate himself to his devotee. This is the amazing quality, Bhakta Vatsala. Krishna is so sweet and warm with his devotees, you see. Actually, that love comes down through the Vaishnavas. It comes down through the Vaishnavas. It comes down through the spiritual master. That special quality of pure love, you see, that was what actually made our movement. Because Prabhupada was giving a love that we could not experience anywhere else. Pure love, you see. No one could love us like Prabhupada loved us. And we wanted to reciprocate with that love. We wanted to try to love Prabhupada back for that wonderful love he was showering on, that causeless love he was showering upon us 24/7. We wanted to try to reciprocate with that love. I know I used to sometimes correspond with people in the material world. But when I got a letter from Prabhupada, I mean, it was just amazing. It was just oozing with unlimited love. Prabhupada was so amazing that he was purely representing that love that Krishna has for all of us by all of his actions in every way, by every gesture, by every word, by every thought in his mind. Everything was just a pure manifestation of Krishna's love for us. And that quality, that pure love coming through Srila Prabhupada, there's nothing more attractive, more wonderful, because in this world, there is no love. What they call love, it's simply cheating. There's no love, it's simply lust. So we try to be happy by loving in this material world, and what happens? Frustration. You try to love someone, they exploit you, then you become frustrated. And if it happens enough, then you become an impersonalist. You say, oh, it's false. Brahma satyam jagan mitya, it's all false. You see, I am a rock, I am an island, I touch no one and no one touches me, like that popular song. You see, they just become frustrated. No more love, I deny everything. As one songwriter said, love is a four-letter word. Just deny it. But that's artificial. That's artificial. Everybody wants love. If they have nobody else, they will keep a dog, you see. Everybody wants to have loving relationships, or a parakeet, or a goldfish, you see. Everybody wants loving relationships. Because actually we all have that original relationship with Krishna. In any one of five rasas, we have that relationship with Krishna. Here the rasas are perverted. The same rasas are there, but perverted form in the material existence. So all we have to do is reconnect through this wonderful process of Krishna consciousness. Perhaps you have heard that term, Krishna consciousness. That is our society's name. International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's so wonderful. Krishna consciousness. Just those two syllables alone, Krishna, they have unlimited nectar. This has been so nicely described by Srila Rupa Goswami. Tunde tundavani ritin gatayate tundavali lamdaye
karna krodha kadambani gatayate kunarbhudebhyaspriham chaita prangana sangani vijayate servendriyanam kritim no jane janita kiyadbiramitai krishneti varnadvai.
Rupa Goswami is saying, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables, Krishna, have produced. Because when I chant this name Krishna, it appears to dance within my mouth. And then I want to have many, many mouths. And when those names enter the holes of my ears, I want many millions of ears. And when those names dance in the courtyard of my heart, my mind becomes completely conquered and I'm stunned in wonder, you see. This is his wonderful verse. Actually, Prabhupada gave this to George. George visited him at the manor and he gave this to George Harrison and said, you make a popular song out of this verse. I don't know if George did that, but it's a wonderful, 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 wonderful verse. That those two syllables, Krishna, you see, they have unlimited nectar. Just like a gulab jamun that has so much juice in it, when it comes squirting out of that gulab jamun, it fills up the whole universe and it bursts through the coverings of the universe, you see. That's what Krishna, you see, is like. So someone may wonder, well, what does he mean, millions of ears and millions of mouths? I mean, what does that really mean? Some people may wonder, you see. But here's an example to help us understand what that means. I gave the example the other day, but I don't think all of you heard it. Just imagine there's some special feast that was made in your honor for some reason, you know. There was a feast made in your honor. Devotees wanted to give you a special feast. And they invited you, come up here to the temple, and you walk in here to the temple room, and the feast is completely fills up the whole room, all the way to the ceiling, you see. Thousands of preparations, you know, 500 different types of akoras, you know, 300 different types of rice. You get the idea, you know, 3,500 different types of ice cream, you know, all the way to the ceiling. Okay, Prabhu, here's the spoon now, and enjoy your feast. Well, I mean, what can I do? I just have this one little belly. I mean, how can I possibly enjoy all of this prasadam? I mean, it's so nice you offered it to me, but I mean, I can't begin to enjoy all this prasadam unless I had millions of mouths and millions of stomachs. Then I could start to get it. So the point is, there's so much nectar in these two syllables, Krishna, that, you know, one mouth and one set of ears can only get a tiny infinitesimal fraction of the nectar. So I don't have enough nectar tasting ability with this one mouth and these two ears, you see. So this is the meaning. He's wanting to have much more facility to enjoy, you see, or to relish the wonderful name of Krishna. So in this way, we have to understand that this person whose name alone can fill the entire universe, indeed the entire conglomerate of infinitesimal material universes with unlimited nectar. And then what to speak of the spiritual sky, you see. This person, he cannot be an ordinary person within the modes of material nature. And everything that he does is completely transcendental. And if we can simply understand something about that great transcendental personality, even just a little bit of understanding, we can become qualified to regain our original position as one of his associates in his Nitya Leela. So anyway, if there's any questions, I can try to answer them now. Oh, here comes the question. Good. Written. That way I don't have to worry about not being able to hear it. Okay. How can we see things or persons in the proper context? Proper context means shastra chakshus. In other words, through our material eyes, I see things. How can I exploit? You see? Materially, we are thinking, I'm the enjoyer. How can I exploit, you see? Here's a beautiful woman, how can I exploit her body? Here's a wealthy man, how can I get some money out of him? That's our material vision, you see. But if we see instead through the eyes of the scripture, we see that the actual position, how Krishna is there and all of these living entities are his emanations, and they have populated the entire universes, material and spiritual. These living entities are everywhere. And our happiness actually is to reconnect with that supreme source of all existence, Krishna. And then we can relate with everyone with Krishna at the center. That's the key. It's not that you have to stop having loving relationships with people in this material world. No, we never say that. We say, now make your loving relationships perfect by making Krishna the center of the relationship. So whatever relationships we have, we should always keep Krishna in the center. Not for my enjoyment or your enjoyment, but for Krishna's enjoyment. That will make everything proper. Always keep Krishna in the center. Could you also compare or say prayers aside from chanting Hare Krishna? Yes. Yes, one can. Praying is actually one of the nine different types of bhakti. Of course, in the beginning, we should learn the prayers of the great acharyas, because we see if a neophyte prays on his own, he's going to start praying for material facilities. There's a tendency to pray for material facilities, which doesn't help us to awaken pure love of God within the heart. So the best thing is for a neophyte devotee is to study the prayers, very carefully study the prayers of the great acharyas, you see. There's so many wonderful prayers, Shikshastakam, Gurvastakam, so many wonderful and so many nice prayers are there. The songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das, so many wonderful sentiments are given. So if we will study these wonderful, wonderful sentiments of the pure devotees, and then we can learn how to pray in our own, in a proper way. So actually composing one's own prayers is a very nice thing, but one has to do it in a... Those prayers should be pure, not begging for material facility. And then if we're begging for material facility, then it's actually the eighth offense. It's namaparab. If I consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be some ritualistic ceremony as given in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas for fruitive gain. So we should chant simply to awaken pure love of God within the heart, understanding full well that Krishna will take care of everything. If I just focus on developing pure love for Krishna, then everything will come by His grace. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paripasate tesham nityapiyuktanam yogachemam vaham yaham. Krishna provides everything to the degree of our purity. To that degree, He will provide everything directly. Of course, even if we're impure, He will provide through the material nature. But as we become purified in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will personally take the time and trouble to facilitate our needs. As Prabhupada points out in his lecture, Krishna will personally deliver to the front door of the pure devotee whatever he needs. So we should pray for pure bhakti. We should pray that the whole world can become inundated in pure bhakti. This sort of praying will bring all auspiciousness, and all good things will automatically come along that. All facilities, material and spiritual, will come if we pray in this way. And why praying is vital in spiritual life? Well, if we don't call out to Krishna, we will call out to someone for something. So we have to, just like I remember when I had some injury. I injured my feet many years ago. The Dallas temple, I had some injuries in my feet and I had to go to the emergency room at the hospital. And I was in a lot of pain. I was going, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. But the guy next door in the other cubicle, he was going, doctor, doctor, doctor. You see? So we're going to call out. That's our nature. Our nature is to call out for help. But if we call to Krishna, then we're going to get... Then we're going to get the proper person who can solve all of our problems. But if we don't pray to Krishna, we're going to pray to somebody else. You see, doctor, doctor, doctor. What the doctor can do, he's also a mortal being. You see, he's also going to die. Can the doctor save me from death? He can't even save himself from death. How will he save me from death? But if I call out to Krishna, 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 then I can become safe from death, you see. And once I'm safe from death, everything else is a piece of cake, because that's the ultimate anxiety we all have in this material world, the fear of death. If that fear is conquered, nothing is fearful. Okay, another question. Thank you very much. How do you become callous to criticism? Because it hurts when you hear devotees do that. Well, sometimes people are very, very critical and unnecessarily. Now, if criticism is constructive, we should be very open and eager for it. Thank you very much. You see, if devotees are actually trying to help us, that criticism we should be very, very eager to hear, you see, because we need it. We have so many faults. And if we hear the criticism of others who are actually trying to help us, then we should be very appreciative. In fact, we should beg for more. Please give me more criticism. But if devotees are criticizing us out of envy, that we have that something about us, they're envious, and they just want to find fault with us, you see. They want to disempower us, take away our enthusiasm for our service out of envy. Just Prabhupada experienced that with his god brothers, you see. They actually tried to sabotage the Mayapur project at one point. They sent a bunch of gundas to create havoc. This was instigated by some envious god brothers of Srila Prabhupada. They actually wanted to destroy Prabhupada's preaching. So if we run into criticism like that, a very destructive type of criticism born out of envy, to that criticism, we should be tough in the face of such criticism, and not that we just lose our enthusiasm. We just want to go in a closet somewhere and hide. We shouldn't be discouraged by that sort of envious criticism. We have to know. Well, I'm serving my spiritual master's order. He's ordered me to always be enthusiastic. If my enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness is making people envious and they're calling me bad names because of my enthusiasm for serving my spiritual master, well, that's their problem. We have to be able to see it from the scriptural viewpoint. If I'm following the order of my spiritual master, I'm properly situated. And if some people have a problem with that, that's their problem. Of course, we try to do everything in such a way that's pleasing to everyone. But sometimes there are, Prabhupada said, sometimes there are envious people in this Krishna consciousness movement. He mentions it in his books. And one has to avoid them, Prabhupada said. So sometimes it happens. We become subjected to envious criticism. And we just have to let it bounce off. We have to be tough. Like Jayadeva Swami one time told me, he said, sannyasis are tough. We can take the criticism. But at the same time, we have to be very humble and genuine and understand when the criticism is actually valid. We have to accept it and change ourselves because of it. So anyway, we've gone a little over time now. I see there's no more questions. So, question? Yes. All right. If you are, Vishnupriya, help me.
Can one receive respect and love if you have not got any self-respect? Can you receive?
He says that you receive love and respect, but if you don't have anything, can we receive it?
The more you give love, the more you get it automatically. You see. If I'm appreciating my god brothers, you see, they will automatically appreciate me. But my motive is I want to appreciate them more and more and more, because I know the more I can appreciate my God brothers, the more that Krishna will be pleased with me, the more my heart will become soft and open to developing love of Krishna. So a devotee is not thinking of getting respect, he's always thinking of giving respect. You see? And the more we're thinking like that, the more respect will come automatically. It's like it's stated about the pure devotee. Ebe yas gushuk tribhuvana. He's famous, but he's respected all over the three worlds, you see. Because he's not trying to get any respect, he's just trying to give respect. He's trying to serve every living entity by reconnecting every living entity with Krishna. Therefore, he is loved and respected all over the three worlds, the pure devotee. So, if you're always in the mood of giving love to others, you will not feel left out. You'll feel how you're swimming in an ocean of love and respect. Because you're constantly giving it, it's coming to you automatically. Does that make sense? Yeah. Hare Krishna Prabhu, during your seminar you mentioned that we should come for Srimad Bhagavatam daily, not that this devotee is speaking, I don't want to come for class. What if the person manipulates the Shastra for their own agenda and seem uncaring to devotees? Well, we have the question and answer session. Somebody has deviated from Shastra, and we should speak up. I know in one class I heard in India in one temple, I was too shy, I should have spoken up. The devotee, he was actually a Ritvik. He had a Ritvik philosophy. So he said we should only hear from Srila Prabhupada. So I missed the opportunity. I should have said, Prabhu, then we shouldn't hear from you, right? Actually, Prabhupada told Sri Narayana Maharaj in the morning walk in L.A., he said, whether I speak or you speak, it is the same. He said, just like a sweet, no matter which part you bite, it is sweet. So whether I speak or you speak, it is the same thing. So Prabhupada empowered us, you see, to preach. I heard in some temples they don't let a devotee give Bhagavatam class. They just play Prabhupada tapes. But that's not what Prabhupada did. When Prabhupada said he hadn't his disciples give, he would attend the class sometimes his disciples give. I was there in L.A. when Prabhupada, there was initiation yoga. He had Vishnu John Swami give a lecture. Prabhupada wanted us to speak. And if, you know, that means he wants that we should hear from not only himself, but from those who are speaking on his behalf, we should hear from them. Actually, sometimes we see that there's a tendency to devotees to, you know, if they give the class, they go, and if they don't give the class, they're not there. But Prabhupada said, when he heard about devotees doing this, he said, don't be a better Paramahamsa than your Guru Maharaj. He said, I'm going to hear the classes. So we should always be eager, whether I'm speaking or whether I'm hearing. You see, it is nectar. It's the same thing. I mean, just imagine if Parikshit Maharaj said, well, you know, I don't want to sit and hear Bhagavatam. If I can't, I'm not going to participate in this unless I can speak the Bhagavatam. You see, whether you're Shukadeva or Parikshit, either way, you become perfect. You become perfect. See, Shukadeva became perfect by speaking the Bhagavatam, and Parikshit Maharaj became equally exalted as by hearing the Bhagavatam. So it doesn't matter whether I'm hearing or speaking. You see, we just take whatever Krishna arranges, that I will do. If he's arranged I should speak, then I will speak. If he's arranged that I shall hear. And either way, it's the same pure nectar, unadulterated nectar, Bhagavatam. Any other questions? Everyone satisfied? Yes?
On the same point, sometimes devotees may feel afraid to express themselves because the person who speaks may be in a position of etc.
I got the first part. Devotees would feel afraid
to express themselves.
Oh. If they feel something in the class is wrong, they're afraid to speak up. That's what happened to me, actually. That's why I didn't say anything. I was also a little scared to speak up.
The person who speaks may be in a position of authority, so they may feel a bit scared to say something. So please be
it's an authority figure who's violating the Siddhanta.
Sometimes maybe a people pray and then
someone. Yeah, well, it happened. You may know that the old days in our Brooklyn temple, there was one lady. She came into the temple and she said, "I am the heiress to the Toyota fortune." And the devotees believed her. She was a con artist. You may have heard about this. Yeah, she was a con artist. And the temple president, who was a sannyasi, believed it. And he was thinking, well, you know, here I'm a sannyas, but if I could marry her, give up sannyas and get married, then, you know, we could lock in the Toyota fortune for ISKCON. So he said, "I'm going to make the sacrifice of my sannyas. I'll marry this woman." He did. He married her. And she was treated like a queen. I remember they came and visited our Miami temple. She had a female attendant who would fan her while she was sitting there listening to the lecture. If you can imagine. A female attendant who traveled with her. She came. The attendant came with her all the way from New York to Miami and was fanning her during the lecture. So, and this woman was having them offer eggs to the deities, Radha Govinda. And devotees were afraid because this is, you know, Bali Mardan's wife, and this is the big heiress to the Toyota fortune. No one said anything. And Prabhupada was very unhappy with the devotees that no one spoke up. They went along with it like sheep. Blind sheep. So, sometimes things come up. And like that time when there was the four sannyasis were preaching Mayavadi philosophy. You may have heard about that. And at first devotees weren't empowered. They didn't know what to say. There's the sannyasis. We had to respect them. But now they're saying that Prabhupada is God. And if we don't accept Prabhupada as God, we should leave the movement. And so the devotees, they were a little bewildered there what to do, but they got together and they talked about it, and they got their position, and they, you know, by talking with each other and reading the books, consulting the Shastra, they realized the sannyasis had gone off the track. They informed Prabhupada about it, and Prabhupada said he kicked them out of the ISKCON Sangha. He kept them as disciples, but they weren't allowed to go to any ISKCON temple. They were forbidden to go to set foot in any ISKCON temple, these four sannyasis. And Prabhupada rectified them and then brought them back. So sometimes an authority figure may deviate. So it's very important. Prabhupada said, all of my disciples have to read all of my books or they'll fall down. You may say, well, I'm a grand disciple. I don't have to do it. No, a grand disciple is also a disciple. There's disciples, grand disciples, great-grand disciples, great-great-grand disciples. They're all disciples. That order that Prabhupada made in his books, that all my disciples have to read all my books, applies to the next 10,000 years. Everywhere, all the Prabhupada Anugas. Doesn't matter how many layers you are removed in the parampara, everyone should read all of Prabhupada's books. So when somebody goes off the track, you can say, wait a minute, that's not what Prabhupada says. You see? If it was some big authority figure, then maybe you should talk to someone outside of the class so he can be dealt with properly. But we can't allow deviations to come in, new doctrines to come in. We have to keep it pure. As Prabhupada has given, we have to keep it pure. We shouldn't water it down, you see. Just like Prabhupada gives that example, there's one sweet shop in Delhi. They only use pure ghee. They don't cheat. And it's very popular. And it's more expensive. The people go there because it's pure. So if we let our society become adulterated with different ideas that may seem to help us become more popular, it's just going to destroy the movement. We have to stick with the pure teachings. And, you know, Ekas Chandra, one moon can light up the whole sky. So we have that moon of Prabhupada's teachings. We should just stick with them, keep them as they are, and this movement will actually lead this world out of chaos in due course of time. The whole planet will become transformed by that ISKCON, which is purely following the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, without deviation. So anyway, we're really going way too over time now. But I thank you all very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.